Mr. Chadwick, Reel 12. We're talking about the time of the Durham Light Infantry when they were in Austria at the end of the war. And we were looking at life. After you'd been in Vienna, I think we'd finished Vienna just about, you went back to Wilden. And are there any more stories that would sort of illustrate life and perhaps the funnier side or anything?
The lumber camps.
What were they like?
For the winter, for the local populace.
Tell us about the lumber camp.
Well, it was great. You were sent up there to these areas with your saws, and you'd so many square metres to saw per day, and the rest of your time was your own. And it was like what you would turn to the Oakwood Pond School. You cooked your own, you got your rations up there, you made your own chips, you went round to the locals, got eggs. And it was like living a Boy Scout existence. It was wonderful. I got a little ski course in.
Was that they had sort of snow schools, divisional brigade snow schools?
Yeah, I went there.
What were they like?
The only time they fell out with the Germans or Austrians, this fellow we had was a bit, for want of a better word, he's a Nazi as far as I was concerned. And he was screaming at us and shouting at us, well, how the lads weren't prepared for this, and the German had it.
This was a ski instructor.
And we were coming down this hill, and there was a lot of trees. And he used to be shouting, screaming, plow left, plow right, well, we're in offices. But we were seeing these lads hitting the trees. He couldn't steer away from them. So when we come near the tree, sticks in the air and died in the snow. And he was able to be caught, isn't he? Because he got some stick from the lads. But as I say, really speaking, it was a holiday. It was so wonderful. And the winter was the dry, crisp winters, not the damp winters we get. It was invigorating. The coffee was yellow the morning. Things of this nature.
Did you actually get any good at skiing, or was it just?
It was only a week. They were just courses for breaks. And I remember they sent me on a blacksmith's course for a week.
Why?
Well, the last job I had was probably blacksmith striker. So they said, send him. What it was for fitting men, but it was run by Germans. They're all Germans who ran it in the Ordnance Corps. And I got on there with them. And at night I went across to there and they had the snaps and one thing and another. Truthfully speaking, they didn't waste the time, but it was a break. Another break, but it was little experiences. Of course, get chatting to the Germans. And what they tried to push down the throat, the only thing that beat them wasn't the British Army, was benzene. It was short of truth. We haven't been short of benzene in the cupboard. We got plenty of that. But there were all little breaks in that, what I call a wonderful period of service. It was great with another thing.
And all through this period, the demobilisations were going on.
All the time.
How did you feel about demobilisation? I mean, were you going to stay on, or did?
Well, I never thought. No way was I coming back as a blacksmith striving with a pigeon, whatever it was. No way was I coming back to that. By the you see, the army hadn't settled down, so career-wise, you couldn't make headways really. You were just waiting. It was about 47, 48 when we started tightening up. We started getting a little bit more back of the discipline.
How did it affect the battalion with all these people leaving? Because you weren't getting anyone new coming in, were you?
Well, we had the commitments to fulfil, so it didn't matter. We could still carry on and join ourselves, although the numbers were coming down. We hadn't. Like, we couldn't have gone to Vienna at one stage, but by then we'd lost so many men. And that went on, I think, to the, I think think it was the end of Jan or the first couple of days of February when we broke up.
How did you feel about the disbandment of the 16th?
A bit sad, in a way. Not so much leading up to it, but on the final day, we all embarked, I think, in grass on the train and went back to Milan. And then on Milan railway station, this is where Captain Coots comes in. He took all of us lot, who had longer to do, onto one platform, and all the ones for Blighty went on another platform. So they went off to England, and we went.
Now, a lot of the men were sent to the foresters all over the place. I mean,
to finish the time off, they haven't got enough to do to go to Greece. They might have had another 4 months.
How would you have felt if you'd been transferred to another regiment? How could you not have gone if you should have?
I couldn't.
But you'd have objected.
I would have objected. And in time, one could have got back to one's parent regiment. Because that was my parent regiment.
So you now were fully Durhamite, although you're from Accrington.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely steeped in it. That was a wonderful thing about the county regiment. That tradition stayed with you. And it did. It did.
So you don't remember much about the journey to Greece. How many were there in the draft?
About 200 of us.
And mostly, like yourself, young chaps who joined up fairly late.
Mostly.
So, did you know that you were going to join the 1st Battalion?
1st Battalion.
Did you know that?
Oh, yes. Oh, no. You knew your movements were going around. So, you knew where you were going.
And where were the 1st Battalion?
In Zambi, northern Greece.
And what was your initial impression of them as you joined them? Because they were regulars. You'd been in, you'd been in a wartime service battalion.
Well, they still hadn't been discharged. So, 200 or so that we sent out to reinforce the 1st Battalion, they were losing men at the same rapidity.
So, although they were regular by name, they weren't.
Not by no means.
Was there much? Was there much difference to your eyes between the 16th and the 1st?
We were Derrens. We were all Derrens.
Was there a more regular regimental attitude?
No. See, the army still hadn't settled down to a big time routine. There were still the comings and goings, which went on all through 46.
So you joined them in late Feb, possibly early March, probably early March, 46.
Late February, early March, yes.
And what company were you put in?
B Company, Major ADB Gibson. Still living today, ADB.
And you were, did you lose your rank when you transferred, or you kept your corps?
I was promoted sergeant within days of getting there. I just forget the exact date.
And how did that change your life? Because that would mean you'd be able to go to sergeant's mess, wouldn't it?
Not as much as under normal circumstances. Interesting question. And the reason that, if I'd been gone with the main body of the battalion, I'd have been in the sergeant's mess every day for the meals, and the bar at night and that. We were up the monastery, which is about 4 miles out. And they called B Company the sporting company, because ADB Gibson was a fanatic on sport, any sport. Basketball, football, swimming, boxing, running. And I finished up with this company, that was great. And we had our own company mess. So, we were away that month at the RSM at that time and said, look, you fellas have got to make a point of coming down to this mess once a week for a drink. there's transport up there. You get in a jeep, the fire engine, the four of the German.
So you had a little company mess of the five sergeants? Of
and the staff major, Norman Sticky.
Okay, so you go down. What was the regimental mess like, the regimental sergeant's mess, when you went on these weekly trips?
Well, there again, there's nothing regimental about it. There was no like a regimental dinner, so that came later.
Where was it set up, the mess?
Well, obviously, you've got a building in the battalion area. You know,
would it offer anything other than a few chairs and a bar?
Some old settings. I mean, all the luxuries that followed into messes later. But nobody was interested. And of course, March when we went, it was cold weather, I know, because we used to have a big, the reason I can remember is we had a big log fire going in the mess. And if you remember, the battle dress, you used to turn the battle dress over and add the gauges. Make it look smart. Well, if they didn't put weights in there, they didn't hang properly. So what we used to do, we get a bit of cloth, measure it, and put 9mm shells in, bullets. Why? For weights. Well, this chap came in one night, and that was bigger than Taffy Jones. Stamped his feet like that. He'd get a real good stamp, he'd fall out. And he threw him on the fire. He shot him. And there was blokes half cut, and there was bullets flying all over the place. Not with a great velocity. It would have done something, but luckily no one was injured. But, mess life wasn't that rigid then. As I said, the army still hadn't settled down.
So a typical night would be you'd just come in, and what was your favourite, what was your tipple then? What would you drink?
Well, again, we're back in Greece. If we went out to the cafes.
No, in the mess. In the mess.
In the mess, or beer.
Not whiskey.
Not whiskey. Never been a spirit drinker.
So, and how much were people drinking in the mess?
I don't know. What was allied to that was there was nowhere to go in Zambia. We were right on the Bulgarian border. Right at the tip of northern Greece. Nowhere to go. I'm a scrappy little village with a single bottle. And it was a horrible place. Anyway, it was out of bounds. But that doesn't mean a thing to soldiers. It encourages them to go. The more you put it out of bounds. Could I tell you a little story about being cooking when we were in the monastery, we were doing a battalion exercise. And this staff major we had then, I don't know whether he's living, but he wouldn't mind me saying this. He openly admitted he was a regular. He'd been an MT sergeant, and he got made staff major. And he didn't know his job. Just didn't know his job. And he was fine. Well, we all carried him. And got him gone. And we went on this exercise. And he said to me, well, some work came, the brigadier's on his way around. So the next thing, I saw the sergeant major, no badge of rank on, cooking fried eggs. And he said to me, the brigadier comes and asks what I am. Tell him I've run obviously one of the platoons or something. Because he was frightened and asked him any questions, he couldn't answer it. Sure enough, the brigadier arrived. What's your name? Chadwick, sir. What platoon? Four platoon, yeah. Are you first or 16? 16, sir, you know. Are you enjoying the exercise? What's your company disposition? Well, I was keen on it. That would be a big problem, I say. Where's the sergeant major, Chadwick? I said, I think he's gone over to one of the, I'm not sure, sir. He's gone somewhere. He's gone to one of the other platoons. said, I see him on my runs. And Spinky's there flying the oaks. And he never got by through. But he was flying if he didn't ask anything. And he was leading the army after about 12 years. I think he'd done a 12-year stint.
Were there a lot of these inefficient NCOs?
They were starting to sort them out there. And what is to bear in mind, Peter, when now you're talking about your regular soldiers, I'm talking of the Durham Light Infantry primarily, but it must have happened in every unit. We were now at the stage where the ex-regulars who were taken prisoner, like on the Dodecanese, Kos and Leolos, were all ready for coming back to the battalion. And some were taken prisoner as a sergeant in 1940. So they wanted promotion when they came back to the battalion. What their fault, they were wounded. And we got Joe Darby Arbour, Whittingham, Noddy Clark, Patrick Edwards, all this lot came back to the battalion. And then the standards started to get a bit more competitive, shall we say. They were wanting promotion rapid, and they got it in preference to us. Bearing in mind, it held the rank one of them, just quite justified.
Were they any good, though? Because surely they were 5 years out of date, 6 years out of date.
Some were quite good, and some were rubbish. And there was some rubbish. But there were some good ones. But you're quite right in what you say, they were so out of date. But as I said, the army still hadn't really reorganised. So the weapons were the same that they knew. And bear in mind, a lot of them weren't taken prisoner to the Dodecanese, which was midway through the war, 43, off Kos. They released in May, they had 6 months leave, and now they were all frozen back to one day alive. And,
were they welcome, really? Or did you, people like you, I mean, you were...
What a ribbon. You know, they used to be singing a song that you won't remember the tune. I think you in my ears, and that's only looking. There used to be some going down there, it's a Vatican song. Give me land, that's the land, and the starry skies of earth. Don't fence me in. But that was the prisoner of war song. But, you know, we are after Whittingham came to war. Typical regular soldier, polishing, got badge on night in his buttons, but wasn't too keen on the training. And up on the hills, which I looked at.
What sort of training were you doing?
Well, we're doing terrain there was good for hard training. It was hard to get filled out administratively, hard in movement, inclement weather, and it had all the ingredients of a wartime situation, you might say. But we didn't stay in Zambi all that long.
When you were training, I mean, a lot of the men must have been hanging on going home.
Well, they weren't interested. But they had a bit of fun. But they did what they were told. And they went into it.
Did the drinking ever cause some of you harder drinking NCOs to not be too competent in the morning, would you say, for exercises or things like that?
No, I don't think so, because somehow then you were fit enough. If you were worn out on an exercise, say, 6 o'clock in the morning, you were an idiot if you really went on the pot the night before. We had that much sense then, did it? Keep yourself right for the job. If it was a normal ballot, especially when we were up in the monastery, we were his own bosses, so it wasn't applicable there.
Well, I forgot to ask, what was that little mess you had like up there, up at the monastery?
And we should invite members up from the main mess, you know, and think we'd no trouble. We could walk out the mess along the corridor into his bunk. It was a little old broken down castle building, only a small thing. It was brilliant. And the lads, they looked it up there, and the company commander was spoiled man. So they took me down because the Royal Palace was there.
Were you aware that the battalion was coming more peacetime regimental, more importance paid to cap badges and uniform and things?
Not so much there. The next move we started that.
So when did you move from Zante?
God bless it.
Roughly.
I'd say about June or July or something. We moved from Zante to Salonika.
Where did you go in Salonika? Or was it to the town of Salonika?
The town of Salonika. Alatini Street was the barracks.
You were actually in barracks? You were in old Greek barracks, were you?
Yeah, or Palamaria Barracks, mine, is what they used to call Rindley Tin Goose, Caligated Iron. Couldn't spell Caligated, so they called it Rindley. And once we moved there, I was made provost sergeant. I was in charge of the police.
What had got you that job? Or was it just available?
I did a bit of boxing. I was a British lad. I think I was reasonably smart. And that's all you needed for provost sergeant. And everybody knew you, sergeant. I was pretty welcome. And that all helped. Because we had some great lads, but hard lads. The Taffy Jones, Mossiola, they were hard. Well, about half a dozen of them gypsies.
Were they other ranks, not
sergeants?
So what was the job of provost? I know it's in charge of the police, but how many regimental police would you have?
Oh.
And what were your duties?
Discipline in the battalion. Primarily looking after the Guardian with the SUS.
SUS?
Soldiers in the sentence. They can't move for the prisoner in the army. He's an SUS, he's a soldier in the sentence. 28 days or less because of the unit guard room. 29 days or more because of the glass house.
So you would, this was not the guard room, this was the guard, you know, where
the guard house,
yeah.
The prison.
So that you'd have your eight men would just be on duty guarding that.
Oh no, the guard that came on every morning, the quarter guard, was billeted in there. They had a sentry on the main gate in the sentry box and they were doing all the sorting and that. During the day, then men didn't sit in the cells like they do in civilian prison. They were out digging the trees, doing the lawns, and the sports field, and all this.
So what was your part of the responsibility?
I just walked around dressed up, looking quite smart and efficient, with a stick on my arm, shouting the odds even and there's a fast sword, just put it out and straighten. General disciplinary.
Well, did that make you unpopular? Because sometimes the regimental police are unpopular.
Never made me unpopular at all.
Did you try and be fair?
Very fair. Firm, but very fair. And treat them as human beings. The screaming hand-down that I watch on television about this modern day is rubbish. You treat them as human beings. And I aren't an enemy in that camp. You say that? And anyone that you meet, you can ask. I haven't an enemy in the camp, even the ones I've put inside.
What were the main offences that you were up against? I mean, what were the problems?
There's one offence, it's so awful, I don't know whether you want to take it. Look. I'll mention his name. A fellow called Sharp, a regular soldier, with a big family. And when we were in Zambi, we met up with a girlfriend out in the local property. When we moved to Salonika, she followed him. That was his business, nothing to do with anyone. We had a very terrible incident in Salonika. where a young driver came to the sergeant's mess to take members of the mess to the Lord Thompson Sergeant's Club in Salonika for the night out. I had the whole sergeant at the time. Now this young lad, I forget his name, he was sat just outside the mess on the veranda, and I didn't know what was going on, I wasn't interested in concern. They were saying, just hang on a minute, so there's a bottle of beer there for him, but he wasn't a drinking kid. But he'd had these few beers. He hadn't been driving long. And that night, it was horrific. The Greeks at Kalamaria Barracks, just behind our barracks, was a mule camp, and they were bringing up all these mules. They'd no lamp at the front, they'd no lamp at the rear, it was pitch dark. These members of the mess got in this truck, driving down Elatini Street. The kid took a flight, he had a few beers, put his foot on Red Cell Wheels instead of the brake, and ran into him. They killed him. They were maimed. There was dead donkeys and mules all over the flaming body. Blah, blah, blah. We got word very quickly, which is 300 or 400 yards dash from the guard room. And when we got there, this girl Blondie is dead. This was the worst case I ever had. And he was having intercourse with her. This sharp. And she was dead. Well, you can imagine my temper. They were employed in the guard room. Got the medical officer down straight away, the adjutant, told him the score, dealt with him, blah, blah, blah. And they sent him straight home to Netley and discharged him. But that was the worst incident I ever had. The nicer side to the story, the kid was a wonderful lad. It broke him. So we had to have a few German court martial. And I think the sentence was given as 12 years imprisonment for his part. And I got a tip off from the adjutant after about a month. Brought him back, and he's going to do a couple of months with us and then be dispatched to Gaza in Palestine for the detention barracks. Now, what he didn't know then, but I did. Once he got there, he was freed. Because it wasn't intentional, it was a terrible stroke of bad luck for him. But we satisfied the Greeks by giving them the satisfaction this man had been severely
killed. How many had been killed, Greeks?
Oh, it was horrific.
So is this blonde, this woman, and others?
Oh, there were soldiers, Edward. Loads of them without legs. It was an horrific accident. He ploughed straight through them. There was dead donkeys, dead mules, dead men, terribly injured men. Oh, it was a battlefield. Oh, it was a terrific case. And the other incident, which I'm sure will interest you, one of the co-sergeants, the mess waiter we had in Salonika, kept pestering a fellow called Norman Watt for any boots or a whole battle chest. So he got some old stuff together and he did flog it to him for coppers. Absolutely true. And that was on Friday. On Saturday, this chap was in the mess serving our meals and then he went off. And on Sunday we went across for his breakfast and things were in a dizzy way. And we asked where this waiter was. And on the Monday morning,